Well, we're going to cross on over live and listen to the Secretary General of Lebanon, Sayed Hassan Nasrallah, who's in the midst of the population there talking. Let's listen.
A speech live. Please be seated. Please be seated. If you could please be seated. This is the first night in Ashura this year whereby a live appearance is made, not behind the screen. Again, calling on the crowds to be seated. The first time in many years an Ashura speech is made live, face to face with the crowd. Thank you very much. Please be seated. I would like you to sit down because we want to speak calmly. We want to speak about the political issues tonight. If you could please be seated. Now, once you sit down, then the guards will step aside. If you remain standing, they will. I seek refuge from Satan. In the name of God, the Merciful. Praise be to God, Lord of the worlds. Praise be to God, Lord of the worlds. Praise be to our Prophet, the last of the Prophets, Abil Qasim Muhammad, son of Abdullah. May peace be upon his family, may peace be upon his companions, and may peace be upon all of the Prophets. As-salamu alayka, Abi Abdullah Hussein. Praise be to Imam Hussein. May praise also to those who fought and were killed in your cause. I praise you as long as I am alive, and may this not be my last visit to you, my last commemoration of your memory. Peace be upon Hussein, peace be upon Ali, son of Hussein, peace be upon the children of Hussein, and peace be upon the companions of Hussein. religious clerics, brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I really want the brothers and sisters to sit down so that they can hear me, because we want to have some calm words. In the end, we might get enthusiastic, but what is required now, our topic, the topic I will speak of, requires calm and requires you to listen. Brothers and sisters, tonight I would like to speak about the political developments No, that's unacceptable. This is the Ashura prayer. In the previous nights, I spoke about cultural issues, religious issues, and other similar matters. And I didn't speak about the political issues. I delayed them until tonight. Now, tonight I will speak about some political issues, and I will leave some other political issues for my speech tomorrow. Now, regarding the political situation, I would like to speak about the regional situation, especially vis-a-vis Israel, how it relates to Israel, not about the whole region. I want to speak about the situation also in Lebanon, and if I have time, I want to speak about Lebanon in two perspectives, security and political, and in the end, I will have a few words to say in conclusion. Now, when it comes to the regional situation from the Israeli angle or perspective, there is no doubt that Israel today is happy with what is going on in our region, in our Arab and Islamic world. The infighting, the internal conflicts which are taking place between the countries and also inside each country and inside each society. And Israel is also pushing for this to happen, for this to continue. I read some articles and I also read some statements by the Prime Minister of the enemy, Benjamin Netanyahu, who has become an expert in the affairs of Sunnis and Shia. In his statements, he's become an expert in this matter of Sunnis and Shia. The Israeli scheme in the region, the Israeli plot in the region has always been to have a region which is torn apart, which is fragmented and divided, entities which are weak on a sectarian basis or on an ethnic basis, on a racial basis, whereby Israel remains the strongest regional power which can impose its conditions and its hegemony on the whole region via this reality which Israel wants to achieve, or this scenario it wants to achieve. It then proves its presence permanently in occupied Palestine. It normalizes its presence with some of the Arab environment, and it becomes an ally of some Arab countries and some of the opposition movements in some Arab countries. And then, within the framework of a settlement or without a settlement, it can impose its conditions and impose its influence on all governments and peoples of the region. This reality exists today. However, there is also no doubt that Israel is afraid of the future. It's happy with what's going on, but it is also afraid of the future, because the future is ambiguous, because the situation throughout the region might get out of control. It might reach the level whereby no world power nor any regional power could take control. And so, those who cooked the poison might eat the poison in the end. So they are afraid, the Israelis are afraid from this angle, because there is ambiguity regarding the future. Israel, my dear brothers and sisters, in our region, Israel is always pushing the situation towards war. As the Sheikh said, the Sheikh who spoke before me, Israel is not looking for peace, nor is it looking for calm. in all this region, Israel was always pushing towards war, and it is still doing so. Now, let's forget what happened before the year 2000. Let's speak about what we all remember and what we all lived through. When we witnessed the events of September 11 in America, Israel and the Zionist lobby in the U.S., they used all their capabilities, their media, political, financial, and security capabilities in order to push the United States of America to invade the region and occupy the region. And I recall in those days the Americans said that Al-Qaeda is the one which committed the September 11 attacks. Israel said it was Hezbollah. Why? In order to bring the Americans here to us. To invade us. Now, the Israelis incited the invasion of Iraq and occupying. They encouraged the invasion and occupation of Iraq. They had a big impact in this perspective. And over the past few months, Israel used all its influence in order to incite America and encourage it to launch a military aggression against Syria. However, it failed. And this reflects the Israeli will. And the same goes for today. When Israel looks around it, and when it finds that there are negotiations taking place between Iran and some world powers, the so-called P5+1, meaning the permanent members of the Security Council plus Germany, and Israel then finds that there is a possibility and a chance for a political or diplomatic solution, for an understanding between Iran and the world powers. And hence, Netanyahu lights up with anger. Then the number of angered countries in the region will increase. Netanyahu is angry, he's crying out, and he declares that he'll use everything in his power to prevent such an understanding from taking place. He resorts to the Zionist lobby, he calls the Russian president, he calls the French, he also calls out for the help of the Arab countries who are his friends underneath the table, and he announces this in public. So what do you want? Any understanding which prevents a war in the region is something Israel doesn't want. What does Israel want? It wants a war in our region. But what kind of a war? It wants a war which keeps Israel safe, which keeps it strong. It wants the Americans to come and destroy Afghanistan. It wants the Americans to occupy Iraq and destroy it. It wants America to strike Syria and destroy it. It wants America and NATO to attack Iran and destroy it, whereby at the same time Israel preserves its safety and security and stability and strength. The Americans yesterday, what did they say? The American State Department said that the alternative to a political solution is a war. Do you, the Americans, want to go to war? The American people don't want a war. Not because they are now sane or they've changed, but because they no longer have the ability to launch a war. America's economic and financial situation and its internal situation and its defeats, the defeats it suffered from in the region and the world, prevent it from going to a new war. However, Israel wants to push America into a new war in the region. Now, the result is that the Israeli plot, which we must always memorize and bear in mind and be aware of, Israel's plot in the region is always war and destruction and sabotage and dividing and fragmenting and sedition and infighting and dragging the outside powers to wage their wars on behalf of Israel. It's very unfortunate that some Arab countries are and still remain today, they still remain side by side, they remain on Israel's side in these choices and alternatives. And they, just like Israel, they reject a political solution in Syria which would put an end to the bloodshed and an end to the destruction of the country. These same Arab countries, some of these Arab countries, we don't want to name them, we don't want to say the first letter of their names, but some of these Arab countries are also very much against any understanding between Iran and the countries of the world. My dear brothers, you, the Arab countries, one person in the crowd apparently chanting, My dear brothers, you, the Arab countries, one person in the crowd apparently chanting. Those people, those Arab countries today, they are also against an understanding between Iran and the world powers. What's the alternative to an understanding? You, the people of the region, you, the people of the Arab world, and especially you, the people of the Arab countries in the Gulf, the Saudi people, the people of the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, the people of Kuwait, the people of Qatar, the people of Bahrain, the people of United Arab Emirates, the people of Oman. What is the alternative? I ask, what is the alternative to an understanding between Iran and the world powers? The alternative is a war in the region. And this war in the region, where will it lead to? Where will it lead to? The Israelis know very well. And anyone who might collaborate knows very well that they can begin with a war in some place, but they are incapable of limiting this war to a specific place or a location. They are looking for sabotage in the region. They're looking for destruction in the region, the whole region. Lebanon, in this perspective, is a detail. It's a small detail when you compare it to what those people want in the region, what those sides want in the region. It's unfortunate as well that Netanyahu has begun to be a spokesman for some Arab countries, whereby he reflects the concerns of these Arab countries. And it's also unfortunate that we hear Mrs. Livni, the former Israeli foreign minister, who is now a minister in Netanyahu's government, when she says that the Israeli government has received messages from some Arab countries which call on Israel not to back down from its stance towards the negotiations regarding Iran's nuclear program. Isn't this shameful? But it's not new. We heard these same words and same statements during the July 2006 war, when the Israelis said, in the middle of the war, when they got tired and when they began to sense defeat, when defeat began to come to surface, Livni herself and Olmert, they also said that some Arab countries are calling us and are telling us not to stop the war in Lebanon. Why? Because unfortunately, the victory of the resistance in Lebanon, the victory of the resistance in Lebanon corners those Arab leaders who have surrendered. It puts them in a corner, a victory for the resistance. This same logic, this same rationale, we also heard during the war on Gaza. During the war on Gaza, the Israeli officials said that some of the Arab governments have called us and they told us not to stop the war in Gaza because they don't want to give a victory to the resistance in Gaza. But in the end, America doesn't work for Israel, nor does it work for its allies in the region, nor does it work for its tools in the region. America works for who? It works for America. Israel works for America. This is something which we need to understand. It's wrong. Israel works for America. Yes, it does have a certain margin, but the one which makes the decisions is the American. We saw what happened over the past few weeks when Israel and some Arab countries were working day and night in order for America to launch a strike against Syria. What prevented the Americans from launching a war? Their interests, their own calculations, their fears, their concerns. And so America will work in accordance with its interests. America will work in accordance with its interests. Now, I can conclude from this introduction by saying that all the people of the region, all our Arab and Islamic people must realize, our Lebanese, the Lebanese people who have lived for decades, our Lebanese people have lived on the cliff of the earthquake. and in danger. They must all know who is looking for war and destruction in the region and who is the one looking for solutions and understandings and settlements which preserve the rights of the Arabs and the rights of the Muslims and the future of this Ummah. The Islamic Republic of Iran and the other powers who are also working for the Ummah, or who is looking out? And the other factor which we must also conclude is that everyone who is pushing the region to war must realize that they will fail and that they will be incapable of achieving any of their goals, just as they failed and they lost and they were defeated ever since 1982. This is the truth, and this must remain present in our minds. Now, regarding the issue of Israel as well, the sufferings of Palestine, from Gaza to the West Bank to the 1948 territories, to the sanctities, to the prisoners, to the refugee camps, with the absence of any horizon and a total block of the negotiations, and the Israeli arrogance and the taking advantage of time to change the situation on the ground, and also at a time whereby we have Arab silence and a complete loss, a state of loss amongst the Arabs. But we must always reevaluate our alternatives and our choices, because we're talking about the future of a people and a country and sanctities. Second of all, Lebanon vis-a-vis Israel. Lebanon was always under a threat, was always under threat from Israel. However, we have some new developments. The first is regarding espionage. Now, some people in Lebanon said this is nothing new. That's right, it's not new. But recently, there have been developments made when it comes to quality and quantity in espionage. I don't want to speak about it. I will leave this to the experts. However, the Lebanese must be aware that everything which is broadcast on the air in Lebanon, if you're speaking with your wife, if you're speaking with your families, if you're speaking with your business partner, with your bank, everything which goes on air, everything transmitted, everything on the internet, on the telephone network, everything completely is listened to and is under the monitoring of the Israelis. So everyone must beware and be cautious. This isn't about Hezbollah and the resistance. It is a national issue. It's a national issue which concerns all the Lebanese, the dignity of the Lebanese, the privacy of the Lebanese, and the normal life of all the Lebanese. This is something which requires us to confront. We are required to confront this. There is also something else, which is preserving Lebanon's sovereignty, its sovereignty over all of its waters. And also, we have the issue of Lebanon having its right to its economic zone, its economic zone with occupied Palestine. And we also have the issue of Lebanon taking advantage of its natural gas and oil reserves. And this is a problem with the Israelis. Now, in all of these new issues, the responsibility lies on the shoulders of the state, and all the Lebanese must support the state and stand side by side with the state. This requires national solidarity, national cooperation. We have divisions, we have our disagreements, we have rivalries and enmities. However, in order to confront these issues, we must cooperate. Espionage targets everyone. Nobody can say this is the problem for Hezbollah and the resistance, so let them solve the problem. No. We, maybe to some extent, we have a lesser problem than others, because we have another network, which I'll speak about, another communications network. But this is a problem related to everyone. Second of all, the waters and the Lebanese economic zone, this also It concerns all the Lebanese to be able to extract our oil and gas and sell it, whereby this will help and benefit Lebanon and its people and all different areas and all different sects and political parties and villages. This also, is this a political party issue? Is it related to one sect? Is it related to one specific area? Or is it about all the Lebanese? So we must look for a certain way whereby we can be unified and cooperate in order to confront these issues, to address these issues, and we are open to discussing all of these matters. I don't have any specific proposal, however, we must try and see how, even in light of these very harsh divisions, these sharp divisions, how can we cooperate in order to address all of these issues. Now, regarding the issue of espionage, I will make 2 points before I go and speak about the Lebanese internal situation. Regarding espionage, the Lebanese state is called upon to take steps. The beginning came from the parliament speaker, then the telecommunications committee of the parliament held a meeting, and we had cooperation from the President and the Prime Minister. Tonight, I say that we as resistance, we are ready. We are at your service. The Lebanese state, whatever it wants, whatever assistance it wants, if we as a resistance, if we can help in any way, we are completely ready. We will help, because this issue, espionage, it concerns all the Lebanese and it is a national interest for all of us. The state goes ahead, it pursues its efforts. If it wants our help, we're ready. If it doesn't want, that's okay. However, in the end, if the state reaches a point whereby it can't do anything, then let the state inform us. The resistance can do not just something. It, in confronting the Israeli espionage, the technical espionage, we can do a lot of things, not just one thing. However, we, for the sake of the Lebanese situation, and they always ask who asked your help and who requested your help. Okay, you the state, go ahead, take responsibility. And when we reach the stage whereby we find that the state is incapable of doing anything, the resistance won't back down from its responsibilities. The last point with regards to espionage is that it is fair to say, it is fair to remind you of the importance of Hezbollah's or the resistance communications network. Now, in Lebanon, we speak about espionage, when it's Israeli espionage, but American espionage, I don't speak about it. They're our friends. We can speak about the American embassy in Awqad, which is a spying base against all Lebanese. No, they don't accept to speak about this, because this leads to divisions. Okay, so let's set it aside. But you're speaking about Israeli espionage. This communications network of the resistance, which is actually not something, it's very moderate. Some politicians don't know much about it. Some people think it's an espionage network. It's like the Katyusha. It goes back to World War II. The resistance communication network is a wired network which connects one phone to another, like the interphone which you have in your home. You can't spy on anyone, but you prevent others from spying on you. This communications network of the resistance is the guarantee for the resistance and allows it to be ready against the enemy. So we are not in the process of being easy or dealing lightly with this matter. I would like to remind once again, targeting this communication network is an Israeli target, not internally. Some people believe that this network allows us to take control of the country. Who said we want to control the country? Second of all, who said that it enables us to take control or assume control of the country? If you have espionage means we're running away from it in such a way, no. This network doesn't have any internal aims. It's part of our confrontation with Israel and with the developments, technological developments on the Israeli side. This further justifies the need for such a telecommunication network for the resistance. Now, regarding the Lebanese internal situation, the political and security perspective. Now, after speaking about Israel, I want to enter through the American gateway. I want to speak about Lebanon by beginning to refer to America vis-à-vis Lebanon, or in relation to Lebanon. I will begin with the statements made by the American Secretary of State John Kerry in Saudi Arabia when he said, of course I don't have the exact quote, but he said actually that we agreed with the Saudi officials that Hezbollah not be allowed to decide the future of Lebanon. Now, some people in Lebanon were happy. They said, okay, the Americans have come, they're going to come, and things like that. And some, if the Americans speak about them, they don't sleep at night. Some thought that Hezbollah didn't sleep at night. Why? Because John Kerry said that Hezbollah shall not be allowed to decide the future of Lebanon. Now, from this statement, I want to speak about Lebanon. For John Kerry to say this, or for Obama to say this, or for anyone in the world to say this, from our perspective, such statements have no effect whatsoever. These statements are something we've heard before and we've forgotten, we've put behind us. This also shows that they recognize, of course, they don't mean Hezbollah as a party, they mean this resistance and this political movement, this national political movement, which Hezbollah is considered an important part of. So they were saying that this political camp, you are forbidden. You shall not be allowed to decide the future of Lebanon. The others are the only ones who can decide the future of Lebanon. America has the right. Some Arab countries have this right. You who represent a big segment of the Lebanese people, and you, this political camp, which really represents the majority of the Lebanese people, doesn't have the right to decide the future of Lebanon. However, this is a recognition. They are recognizing you, recognizing your capability and your strength. And for this reason, it's required for the U.S. and Saudi Arabia and a international and regional group to say that you're not allowed to decide the future. Because they recognize your capability and your strength, they are required to make these statements. Why do you always look at the empty half of the cup? Look at the filled half. Number three, this doesn't have any value? No, it doesn't. Is it the first time where the Americans stand and say we will prevent Hezbollah and the resistance and this political movement? This is a long story. Ever since 1982, America and Israel and some Arab countries wanted to draw the future of Lebanon and the region. And their map was prevented from being fulfilled by the resistance, and Hezbollah is part of this resistance, and the map which the resistance wanted was indeed drawn for the region and for Lebanon. In 1996, you all remember when all of the leaders of the world met in Sharm el-Sheikh in Egypt. All of the leaders of the world, they met and they issued statements of condemnation and accusing the resistance movements in Lebanon and Palestine, describing them as terrorist movements, and they declared war on the resistance movements, and they wanted to draw a future for Lebanon and for the region. And hence we saw Operation Grapes of Wrath in 1996. and they were defeated, and the resistance was the one which achieved victory via its martyrs, its people, its army, and the martyrs of the Qana massacre. In 2000, they also wanted something, but Allah and the men of Allah wanted something else, and what Allah wanted took place. Isn't this the truth? In 2006, chance now of al-maut li Israel, which means death to Israel. In year 2006, didn't the whole world stand behind Israel during its war against Lebanon for 33 days? And Dr. Condoleezza Rice, who is the beloved friend of some people here in Lebanon, Rice said that we are witnessing the birth of a new Middle East at that time. But who overthrew this cancerous tumor which America and Israel wanted to draw in this region? Wasn't it you? Wasn't it the resistance? Wasn't it the people of Lebanon and the resistance of Lebanon and the army of Lebanon? Weren't they the ones who overthrew this plot? We are not chanting slogans here. Okay, sit down. I don't want you to stand up anymore. Please be seated. We are speaking about facts here. I'm talking about facts. Facts which we witnessed, which we were part of. We're not just chanting slogans. We're not trying to be enthusiastic. We're not just chanting rhetoric. No. And so, whether it's America or anyone else, the Zionists or anyone else, the Arabs or anyone else, I mean some Arab countries, of course, this cannot have any impact whatsoever in how we deal with the facts which exist now in Lebanon. So, I'd like to tell them nobody can eliminate this movement, and we also don't want to eliminate the other side with all of its political affiliations, with its religious and sectarian affiliations. This is the realistic equation in Lebanon. It requires us to recognize this truth and to cooperate and to communicate and to be partners. Sometimes they get angry with us, sometimes we get angry with them, sometimes we hear cries from here, sometimes cries from there. This always happens as a result of the atmosphere of rivalry which we have in the country. However, in the end, reality says that there are two political camps in Lebanon, and there is no choice in front of them or in front of the Lebanese except to look for the commonalities and cooperate in order to draw the future of Lebanon. Not the Americans, not John Kerry. Nobody outside Lebanon can draw the future of Lebanon. You, the Lebanese, are the ones who should draw the future of Lebanon. Second of all, also in the political perspective, everyone in Lebanon agrees on the importance of forming a new government. Now, the caretaker government can fill the vacuum, but it doesn't solve the problem. Security problems are increasing, the social problems, economic problems, financial problems are all increasing, the also collapse of the state institutions, also the absence of state institutions. These problems can't all be solved by a caretaker government. What is required, there must be a new government. The possible equation now and in the future, after 1 year, after 2 years, the realistic scenario which preserves the rights of everyone and guarantees the participation of everyone and reassures everyone is the formula we referred to before, 996, 996 meaning distribution of ministers in the government, in the cabinet. Why the delay all this time? Very frankly, because there is a regional decision made by Saudi Arabia and also March 14, not the former government right now. Of course, former government without the presence or participation of the other political camp, Hezbollah and March 8. But they can't do this, so don't form a government. Wait. Why should we wait? Let me simplify it. Wait. Syria will end. This is something I said before, weeks ago. They said before, please wait, Syria will end. One month, 2 months, now 7 months have passed. When the Americans were about to launch a war, they were going to form a government, but they said, wait, the Americans are coming to Syria, the situation will change, so don't form a government. So there are some people who are preventing the formation of a government, some sides preventing the formation of a government in Lebanon because they were waiting to see what would happen in Syria. Weeks ago, I described what was going on, even when we speak in a calm way. But what's the difference? Even if we speak calmly or if we raise our voices, anything we say is considered a threat. I said very calmly in a previous speech that in Syria, the situation is XYZ. Islamic State in Iraq, Levant and Nusra, the divisions, the Turkish, the internal opposition, the outside opposition, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, America, France, 1, 2, 3. Put this aside. You won't achieve your goals. Don't put your money on this. Separate Lebanon from Syria and let's sit down to form a government. Now, back then, some people didn't deny the facts which I said because they are facts. They said no. The situation on the battlefield in Syria can change. But from weeks until today, how did the situation on the battlefield change? In Aleppo, on the outskirts of Aleppo, in eastern Ghouta and elsewhere, how did it change? On the contrary, over the past few weeks, since my last speech until now, everything on the battlefield shows that things are going in the opposite direction, opposite from what you want. You, the other political camp in Lebanon. So if anybody in any place in Lebanon or the region or the world, if anyone is waiting to form a government, if anyone is waiting to achieve victory in Syria before forming a government, I respond by saying you won't achieve victory in Syria. Now, something new happened. Listen to this new factor. Something new happened. It's clear. Please be seated. It's clear that in Syria things aren't going well for that other side. So, let's form a government. They agreed to the 996 formula. When we said that this is a concession, we weren't exaggerating. Now, they were told, this is not analysis, this is my information. Now, the opposing political camp, March 14, they were told to wait because there are negotiations now about the Iranian nuclear program. This is something new, only days old. They were told, the March 14 camp was told that there are negotiations taking place regarding the Iranian nuclear program. The results of these negotiations could be that Hezbollah will end. So wait, if negotiations go through and there's an agreement, Hezbollah will be eliminated. So don't go ahead and form a government with Hezbollah's participation. Now, first of all, I'd like to comment on this. Do they expect, for example, some of the regional powers and some Lebanese parties, whatever be the trajectory of the Iranian international negotiations, do they expect that Iran will come to Lebanon and tell Hezbollah, abandon your national duties, abandon your national rights, abandon your resistance, and hand Lebanon over to the other political camp? He who knows Iran and knows Hezbollah knows that these are illusions and dreams. What are you waiting for? This is first of all. Because never did this happen before, nor will it happen in the future. It didn't take place, nor will it take place. Second of all, the trajectory of the negotiations regarding Iran's nuclear program, there are two scenarios. Either they reach an understanding, or they will disagree, and God forbid, we will reach a war, or things will head to a war. Now they're trying to give the impression that Hezbollah is concerned because of negotiations. Now, if we go to war, God forbid, then everyone must be concerned, but others must be concerned more than we should be concerned or afraid. Others must be more concerned than us if things reach the level of war, if a war takes place. The second scenario, of course, if we go to war, God forbid, then everyone must be concerned, but others must be concerned more than we should be concerned or afraid. Others must be more concerned than us if things reach the level of war, if a war takes place. The second scenario, of course, is an understanding. And remember, mark my words. After an understanding, if an understanding takes place regarding Iran's nuclear program, our political camp will be stronger and more capable regionally and internationally. So, what are you relying on? What are you waiting for? Number three, and the third point, the last point in this regard, when big settlements, major settlements take place in the world, allies and friends of this side or that side are afraid. This is something usual in the world, but for us, the situation is not as such. Why? Because we're not afraid of what our ally could do. We're not concerned regarding our ally. Very clearly, we had and we still have two main allies, and I thank God for that. Not many allies. Iran and Syria. Tell me, was there any day whereby we were sold out by our allies? Was there any day whereby our allies handed us over, the Iranians or the Syrians? Was there any day whereby we were betrayed or stabbed in the back or conspired against by our allies? No. You can remember from July 1993, 1996, year 2000, July 2006, until today. Never did this happen. In the most difficult circumstances, it never happened. We are confident when it comes to our relations and our alliance. But you, can I remind you the number of times your allies have abandoned you? I won't say your masters, your allies. How many times have they abandoned you? How many times have they sold you out? How many times have they reached understandings and left you abandoned on the road? How many times did they disappoint you? And over the past few weeks, regarding the issue of an American war in Syria, that's the last example, which is only weeks old. You're waiting for nothing. Don't wait for Syria. Don't wait for the Iranian nuclear program. Don't wait for anything. This is Lebanon. Lebanon is the responsibility of all of us, and we must care for Lebanon. Every day which is lost for Lebanon's security, Lebanese security, Lebanese dignity, the also future of Lebanon. So why are we wasting all of this time? What are we waiting for? What are we waiting for as we waste this time? I tell all the Lebanese, you must also take responsibility. We must not accept this reality. Let anyone explain to me or explain to you. Is this really in the interests of the Christians, of the Muslims? Is this the interest of the Sunnis in Lebanon? Is it the interest of the Shia in Lebanon? Is it the interest of the Druze in Lebanon not to have a government? It's not the interest of everyone. It only serves the interest of the outside world, the foreigners who are imposing their will on this political camp or that political camp. The Lebanese must decide and take steps and take advantage of time and not change for and not wait, sorry, for regional changes and international changes and developments, and must take responsibility. I also had a few words to say regarding security and Tripoli, the situation there. However, time is limited. I'll leave it till later. Now I want to conclude regarding tomorrow, Ashura, the 10th day of Muharram. First of all, please, just wait a moment. First of all, I actually, along with all of my colleagues, all of us who watched Ashura this year, I would like to address you who have turned out. I would like to address all those who came out and participated and commemorated, took part in all of these sermons in different areas. I salute you from the bottom of my heart. I express my thanks from the bottom of my heart for this high turnout, for this courageous turnout, this turnout, despite the dangers which existed and still exist. And I pray to God that He accept your efforts, He accept your turnout, and that He reward you. And second of all, I would like, just a moment, please. I would also like to express my thanks to the Lebanese army and to all of the security services, the official security services, without any exception, for all the efforts they pursued, especially over these past few days and nights in all different Lebanese regions. We know the burden they must carry tonight and also tomorrow. I would also like to express my deep thanks to them, and I pray that God helps them in order to carry out this national and ethical duty, and that they be able to make the required achievements. And also we must express our thanks to those who managed and took part in these sermons, in making these sermons take place, those who read these sermons, all those who took part, who read the poetry, everyone who participated in these commemoration ceremonies, and the neighbors, the houses who are surrounding, housing units surrounding this area. Regarding tomorrow, until this moment, I pray to God and I thank God. Alhamdulillah. That everything has gone well, and we also hope that things will go well until these ceremonies or these sermons end. The main point which I want to emphasize in the end is that people going out to the streets in Ashura on the 10th day of Muharram, in all the streets, this doesn't represent a challenge to anyone. Tomorrow we won't go down to the streets to challenge anyone. No, not at all. We, this year, we are going down to the streets just as we did last year, and before last year, and also for tens of years. In this country, we're speaking about our country, there's nothing new, and we are going down to the streets to express our solidarity and our love for the Prophet of God and our sorrow, and to express also our pain regarding what happened in Karbala, and also to express our stances and our opinions. And if anyone wants to punish us for our love and our friendship and for our sorrow and for our political stance, or if anyone wants to punish our people, our families, our women, our elderly, our children, this is something which any sane mind and any religion rejects. However, there are some who might have such a way of thinking. So we are going down to the streets in such a spirit, not in the spirit of challenging. However, on the other hand, we, in the previous years, Usually, because as you know, we had winter in Ashura, and hence the 10th day came during winter. Sometimes it came under very, very difficult heat in the summer. So I used to speak to you before when I made my speeches, and I said that nothing can come between us and our Hussein, whether it be cold or snow, or a burning sun, weather or hunger or thirst. Nothing should come between us and our Hussein. Today, we are people who are frank and transparent and clear. We don't want to say anything but the truth. Tomorrow, Ashura is a different day. It's different than all previous years. It might not be in our interests, it might not be an interest to say this, but we want to be clear. The possibility of a security threat does exist, it is present. The security services, the army, Hezbollah, the Amal movement, we are all pursuing, all of them are pursuing efforts. Until now, everything has gone well, and these efforts will continue. Everyone will cooperate, the people, the families, the people in the villages and cities, they will all cooperate. However, we in Lebanon tomorrow, we will go down on Ashura, and at the time where we have a different situation. Previously, I used to say that hunger, thirst, or staying up at night, or snow, or rain, or a burning sun should come between you and prevent you from being with Hussein on Ashura, on the 10th day of Muharram, and tomorrow. And tomorrow nothing except God's will, nothing, whether it be danger, whether it be an explosion, whether it be bloodshed, whether it be car bombs, nothing will come between us and our Hussein. This experience is new in Lebanon. However, in Iraq, it has been ongoing for years. For years, our beloved, those who love Ahlul Bayt in Iraq, and by the way, the Sunnis and Shia participate in the commemoration of such occasions. For years, every day on the road to Karbala, in the cars traveling to Karbala in the Husayniyas, they are killed in tens and wounded, tens of them. However, this bloodshed, has it prevented them in Iraq from commemorating these rituals, from commemorating the memory of Amir Hussein? No. On the contrary, the participation increased. Those who commemorated increased. This happened in Pakistan, in Afghanistan, and today, even in Bahrain, we had different forms, a different form of harm done to those commemorating this memory. So this behavior doesn't have any impact. Pakistan, Afghanistan, Iraq, Bahrain, any threats, any attacks won't have any effect, because faith is faith, and the love is the same love, and the readiness for martyrdom is the same as it always was. Tomorrow, God willing, In all of the sermons, in all of the Ashura marches, which were called for by Hezbollah, Amal movement, the Shia Council, the religious clerics in all different Lebanese regions, tomorrow, with God's help, we will witness big participation and a great increased participation. A participation which is up to the standards and up to the level and sacrifices of Abi Abdullah al-Hussein and Abi Fadl al-Abbas and Sayyida Zainab. Tomorrow we will meet, God willing, and our minds, our knowledge, and our hearts, our feelings, our love, our will, and our stance will be the stance of the companions of Imam Hussein, just as they were on the 10th day or on the night before the 10th day of Muharram, when Imam Hussein said that now we have night, so you can go, you can leave if you want, save yourselves. This night has come, so take advantage and leave. Let everyone get his family and leave. And leave me to confront the enemy. They want Hussein to stay alone, but the companions of Hussein back then said, do you want me to leave you? You want me to leave you and stay alive after you? I cannot live after you. And they want us to leave our Hussein. And I say now, at this time, those who want us to leave Hussein, I say, we won't live after Hussein. Sayyidi Mawlai Abi Abdullah al-Hussein, son of the Prophet of Muhammad, God willing, we are your beloved. Sayyidi Mawlai, we are your beloved. We are loyal to you. For decades, we wrote our faith and our commitment with the blood of our martyrs and our wounded and the pain of our prisoners and the tears of our widows and our orphans. We will remain as such until we meet you. Assalamu alaikum, Abi Abdullah Hussein, son of the Prophet of God. May peace be upon all of those who were martyred in your cause. Praise be to all of you, as long as I am alive, as long as we have day and night, may God not make this my last visit to you. Peace be upon Hussein, peace be upon Ali, son of Hussein, peace be upon the children of Hussein, peace be upon the companions of Hussein, and assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Well, live from Southern Beirut, there, unlike other times where you were watching Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah and his previous speeches coming by a satellite link, this time he was there actually in person giving a speech in Southern Beirut in Dahiya. Now, he spoke about many points. Obviously, I want to highlight one of the most important ones, which he pretty much started on the onset as getting into, and that was about Israel. He said that Israel is happy due to the circumstances of the region. He says that Israel is pushing for chaos, infighting, and prominently we have seen what this sectarianism of which Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah talked about is what Israel is pushing. And he said this is because it will make Israel appear stronger, and therefore it can impose his conditions on the region, such as in the occupied Palestinian territories. This also includes Israel's push for war. Now, in terms of that, the most prominent scenario that he outlined there is negotiations between the world powers and Iran, of which Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah said that Israel, seeing that these negotiations were going in a positive route and possibly an agreement could have been reached with the world powers and Iran, he said that he called everyone, he called the Western officials, he called even Arab countries not to have this agreement go through. And he said that's really embarrassing for certain Arab countries to have called Israel and said that Israel has to do everything to not have this deal happen. He also talked about how if a deal with Iran is not going to be reached, that it could spell the possibility of a war in the region. But on a deal with Iran, meaning to end Hezbollah, he said that if an understanding takes place regarding Iran's nuclear program, that is going to even make Hezbollah's standing stronger, because he said that we will not be sold out by Iran. Now, he made lots of other statements on regional countries, such as the country he himself is in regarding Lebanon. He said that there were some reports that Lebanon perhaps is going to be given away if a deal with Iran is reached, and he said that that is not something that's going to happen. These types of statements coming in particular from the U.S. has been made before. We're going to give you a roundup of some of the other important highlights made there by the Hezbollah Secretary General Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah in our news bulletin coming up at half past the hour. Do stay with us.